Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and this week there is no Derek Specht. He's gallivanting around Killarney Provincial Park with his family, and so Alan Drummond is joining me. How you doing, Alan?
Good day, mate.
Alan from Kingdom Outdoor Products and many, many other things. What's the Facebook page you have?
What Facebook page?
Yeah.
Oh, the group Sea Kayak Ontario.
Sea Kayak Ontario.
See? We're over 2,000 members now. And that's just kind of organically grown over...
It's been a few years.
COVID. I conceptualized that on Lake Shore of the Lake Superior Provincial Park, September 2020. For 4 years, 2,000 people.
Wow,
pretty awesome. I don't think I've had to kick anybody out who wasn't selling a fake kayak T-shirt. I haven't had to intervene in any arguments. I haven't had to caution anybody. So it's like I think I'm the only Facebook group admin on the planet who can say all those things. I think every other paddling group. They kick people out, they ban people, they referee. That's a good group. Lots of fun, lots of sharing.
Right up until tomorrow.
John Brower, who's probably going to listen to this, he's come close a couple of times. No, I'm kidding. John's great. it's a great group. It's a lot of fun to manage. People warn me as it grows, it's going to get more mismanaged and unmanageable and all that. And I'm like, all right, well, we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. And it hasn't yet, which is kind of cool. So.
Yeah. And you're right. That is rare that you get a Facebook page or group that does that sort of thing nice and easy and no politics and all that involved. People just want to talk about sea kayaking.
Yeah, essentially. And, you know, I made it like, yes, it's called Sea Kayak Ontario. And originally it was for, you know, people thought, oh, it's only to do with sea kayakers in Ontario. I'm like, well, no, it's to... things of interest to sea kayakers in Ontario. So like a few people I know, Joyce and Cam and some others, were in Scotland recently and they posted about that on the page. And, you know, Christopher Lockyer from the East Coast, you know, he comes down and does the odd course and that. He posts on it, you know, like all I tell people is don't be spammy. And there's other pages where there's lots of room for the silly jokes and, like, you know, or my own page for those, you know, but just it's been pretty good group. People share trip reports all the time. People share articles they've seen. I often post articles from like Paddling Magazine or anything I come across. And it's just a really good group about sharing and learning and happiness. Does that sound too cliche?
That's what paddling's all about. Being happy, getting out there, enjoying.
Yeah. And cliches.
All right, we'll just be all cliches this week. Can you feel the love?
What's new with you? So Derek's off paddling Killarney. You got a much coveted
spot. Yeah, last minute spot. Like that never happens.
Very cool.
Yeah. So no, him and the family are up there enjoying the wilderness canoe tripping and. Hopefully we'll...
One canoe or did they take two yet?
No, they've only got one still.
Okay.
Yep. He hasn't pulled the trigger on a second one because, I don't know, he likes to paddle. He likes to be in the back of the boat. And eventually the kids will take over.
Can you mute this for a second so nobody can hear what I'm about to say? Hashtag control freak. Okay, you can unmute it now. Nobody will hear that, right?
No one will hear that, yeah. You know what? I get to be the same way, though. I mean, part of it with me is sitting in the front of the canoe, there's not enough room for my legs. You know, being a 6 foot tall person sort of thing. I just prefer being in the back of the canoe, paddling and steering and... Hashtag control freak, whatever.
All right, so this segues nicely into our first, our 1, 2, 3, like third.
Our 10th, 4th, 7th.
And here I am. Screech! We're getting off topic already.
Is this your first day listening to this podcast?
Tracy ever been in the back of the canoe?
What's that?
Has Tracy ever been in the back of the canoe with you?
Not with me.
No.
No, she's always in the front or the middle.
Hashtag control freak.
Yeah. But she has paddled in the back of the canoe before.
Oh, I know. She did the Tori's
thing. Paddle like paddle a girl.
Yeah. And I know she's been out with others and girls' trips and whatnot. So. Mm-hmm. But I think it just goes to, like, you know, we all, like in any relationship, whether it's paddle partners or life or work or whatever, we get into these comfortable roles and we just kind of go with it, right? So, yeah. And then I'm sure with you, like me, when, you know, you were paddling for years and years and years and years and years with not a lot of involvement with Tracy because you had your thing and she had her thing, then all of a sudden she jumps in and, you know, I don't want to say upsets the apple cart, but changes it. The dynamic changes.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a whole new.
Well, like, for the last number, well, I've started, like, really sea kayaking since, like, 2008. And up until, like, 2 years ago, it was mostly alone. Not alone, just it was me. I didn't have my partner along because they didn't paddle for one reason or another. And then Tamara came along, and she loves the outdoors. And, you know, I guess, what are we now? 2024, 2023, she bought her own boat. 2022, we had her, I think, twice. And 2023, we ended up finding her and getting her a decent sea kayak. And she just loves it. So it's, like, kind of changed the dynamic of, you know, my paddling, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, with me, I mean, when it comes to canoe tripping and stuff, it's you get that core group of people you paddle with, or you're mm-hmm. solo. And then all of a sudden, it's sort of like life takes over. And while some of these guys, you know, they got their families, or they got work things, or they got other things, or kids are getting older now, so they got to do all these other stuff. And you're like, well, I'm going solo a lot more now, or, you know, looking for other people. And, you know, even Tracy, she's like, well, I want to go outdoors.
Or maybe actually learn to like us again, and they want to come with us.
Right?
Oh, you still do like me after blank years.
So many years. We're 30 years this year, eh?
30?
30 shit. Years, yeah. She hasn't kicked my arse to the curb yet. Not for my lack of trying.
Underwear older than your relationship with Tracy?
What's that?
You have underwear older than your relationship with Tracy?
Underwear? No. T-shirts, yes.
Socks?
Socks? T-shirt? No socks, no. No. Oh, heavy socks.
On that t-shirt.
I got heavy socks older than our relationship. Oh. And rock t-shirts. Rock t-shirts are older than dirt. But yeah, it's, you know, she started coming along on the trips and it really changed the dynamic. But when you, just to get back to the paddling bit, I am so used just to automatically jumping into the back seat of the canoe
mm-hmm.
that it's just like a car. You're always driving your car and then all of a sudden you let somebody else drive your car. It's weird sitting in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
Right. But even still, it's like we get to a portage. The first thing I do is pick up the canoe.
Yeah.
Not even saying, hey, well,
her role like that, right? And she does this and that.
Yeah.
And
yeah. We've sort of developed that.
Like I worked with my brother, my older brother, for 13 years. And my father, who was our boss, used to get frustrated. He and I could move a whole house or work together a whole day and not exchange a word. But we worked in, like, symmetry and unison. We didn't have to say a word. We just knew what each other was going to do and how to pick up a machine or how to pick up a couch or whatever. It's like, you just, you know your role. You know how the other person's going to react. You don't have to second guess it. Oh, Tracy has the paddles and the pack, and I've got the canoe, and mm-hmm. the dog's about to chase running around after a skunk or something.
Yeah.
Or something, so... No, it's new. With Tamara, it's new because she just came into it new, so she didn't have any formal training in that. Athletic by nature, which is good, and she's loves to learn, and we've paddled with some pretty good people. She did do a day at Paddlepalooza a couple years ago up on Georgian Bay with the Ontario Sea Kayak Center, so that helped. That gave her a few little fundamentals about rescuing and all that. But yeah, it does definitely change the dynamic of like loading the car, unloading the car. It's like, you know, I'm used to always just being, well, my crap all over the car, and I got to figure out spaces for two people's crap all over the car, and I'm getting ready and doing this, and she's like, what do I do? And I'm like, I don't know.
Well, that was us in the back country.
And so that was like our symmetry and our what she does, what I do, yada yada yada. So, which is really kind of neat. So.
Yeah, it does take everybody a while to, like you say, get to learn what the other person's going to do, yeah. Right? So it's like, okay, well, I know he's going to do that. And instead of just sitting here waiting to be told what to do, well, I know this needs to be done, so I'm going to go do that. And then after a while, that sort of becomes your thing. Well, I know, Tracy's going to go do this while I'm doing this.
Well, we also have to be careful about telling them what to do and have to do it. Grown-ass males don't have it very well. Get enough tact to really know how to do that all the time.
Well, no, those are actually her words. Tell me what I need to do.
Okay, that's good.
Well, for the first few trips, which is, you know what? Just sit there and relax. Because it's easier for me just to do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she'd start seeing what I was doing. And I would say, okay, this needs to be done, right? Yeah, if you want to do that, do that. That's over there. That's over there. That needs to be set up over there. You know? And then, yeah, over time, they just learn. And then, as you say, it's a symmetry thing. Everything gets done, and you don't really need to say anything. It just gets done.
Which is good.
Yeah.
What's next on this, like, four-page thing I was supposed to read earlier tonight and I barely have?
The 18 pages? Lack of paddling. Let's talk about that.
In a way. Well, and that goes back to, like, you know, just getting older. Like, things are getting in the way. Weather has sucked in the Toronto area recently.
Yeah.
What is July ever? So that kind of put a damper on things for us. And also, I've been busy running the tour company again. That's getting much busier. So, you know, I have 12, 14-hour days some days. So it's like the evening paddles are gone. And then, you know, you do family visits. And we spent a week up in the Laurentians with Tamara's family last week, 10 days, actually. And, you know, we didn't even bring our boats. They had little wreck kayaks up there.
Right.
But yeah, I bet you we've only been out mid-August and probably only out six times this year, which is kind of eek, but here we are. Oh, yeah. We were at a wedding on Friday, so that kind of put us, we're up in Barrie, an hour north of the city, at a wedding on Friday. So, of course, no paddling on Saturday because we were, let's just say, no shape to paddle on Saturday.
Oh, you
but
were.
But here's something funny. So I don't know if I came up with this on my own or if I read it somewhere or saw it somewhere, but. So it was a friend of Tamara's, right? And it's like, Tamara's people, Tamara handles the gift and the card and all that. She gets a really nice little wedding card and she writes her check and puts the gift in. Nice, nice, really nice gift. And, you know, it's all ready to go in the box when we get to the reception hall, which was just a neat little winery just outside Barrie. And so I came up with the grand idea, not even knowing these people, that I should go to the dollar store and get kind of just a gaudy, very dollar-looking wedding card. And I wrote in it, congratulations. Thank you so much for having us. And then I made two very scribbly names at the bottom of it. I went to Starbucks. I got a $9.13 gift card for Starbucks. Put that in that cheap-ass wedding card, licked it up, and put that in the box as well. So at some point after the wedding, I'm sure they're going through all their lovely gifts, a check from, you know, Granny, and a check from Auntie, and a wad of cash from Uncle Phil, and a check from Tamara and Alan, and then this Starbucks gift card from, who the hell is that?
Hang on, let me write this down. I think we're going to a wedding soon.
Oh, I recommend for anybody to do it.
If only you could be a fly on the wall.
Around whoever was opening the box on Sunday or Monday or Saturday, whatever the hell it was going to be, I wish I was a fly on the wall to see, like, what the heck is this?
And it's not even a round number, eh?
No, it's just a random Starbucks card. I wanted to, like, mush it up, mar it up a bit so it looked like a used Starbucks card. I wanted to ask the Starbucks lady, it's like, do you have any, like, are the Christmas cards in the back? Like, let's just get a Christmas Starbucks card and put a random number on it. So somebody would think it was something left over from Christmas or something.
I think I have one. And they're reloadable, right?
Yeah. Anyway, that obviously absolutely nothing to do with paddling, but That was
well, fun. But, and then
but yeah, people haven't been out on the water a lot lately. Just it just seemed either weather or circumstance has been getting in the way, unfortunately. So hopefully
yeah.
that'll change for the rest of the season, but who knows.
You know, we were talking about that a few episodes ago, saying, you know, you don't really feel like a paddler because we really haven't been out that much this year compared to past years. And we're finding we're not the only ones. Things are have been busy with a lot of people, and they're just not getting out as much as they have been in the past few years.
Which is fine, I guess. Like, I'm enjoying it more when we do go out. We do purposeful. Now it's like we'll go for a day, we'll make sure we surround ourselves with some nice people, or just on our own. You know, I haven't done a solo yet this year. I've even done a night paddle this year. We did a couple of night paddles last year. I did a solo. It was a cloudy sunrise paddle earlier this summer, which kind of sucked, but at least I was out there like 5 something in the morning.
Right.
Had the harbor, Toronto Harbor to myself, which is, you know, my favorite. So, it's weird, but I don't know. And weirdly, I'm not missing it either. I don't know why. I don't know if that's a problem or not, but I intend on fixing it.
Well, you know what? It makes you enjoy it that much more because you're missing it now. Yeah. You know, you're not just taking it for granted, sort of like sitting at a cottage all summer and you can just go out whenever you want. You know,
right.
Now you're actually missing it. And when you do get out, it just means that little bit more, right? So, and yeah. Now I know we've had life trouncing all over us all summer. And now at the end of, you know, mid-August now, the end of the month, we've got a 10-day trip coming up. And then in October, I've got another one coming up. And we've just been saving the good times for the end of the year.
There you go.
Yeah. That's it. Cool. Speaking of Toronto Harbor,
yeah,
there's something new in Toronto Harbor, which
when
you sent it to me, I'm thinking, well, this can't be good. But then you don't know.
It's not bad.
Well, I thought it was sort of because we've had the idea of like a houseboat, people pulling up to the houseboat, and the houseboat is actually like a Tim Hortons coffee place.
Yeah.
Right? So when you said a tiki bar in Toronto Harbor, I'm thinking, I can paddle on up, have myself a couple of margaritas, and continue on?
I don't think it's quite as easy as that. From what I gather, through a quick look at the website, a couple of friends over the weekend have posted this on different Facebook groups, and I went to the website and looked at it. Yeah, you pay, I forget what it was, 60 or 75 bucks.
75 like bucks a person.
How much is it?
$75 on the weekday. Yeah. And on the weekends, you get a deal for $75. They have a weekday.
I remember once I was at Walmart, and there the price of something, let's say it's $1.98, right next to it, you could get the same thing if you bought two of them for $4. It'd take 4 cents more to get two of them.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website,
and it says,
it said weekday, $75, weekends, $75.
All right, let's put it down to they're new, they have no idea what they're doing yet, they don't know what's going to happen. So you can also book it private up to 12 people, that's $750.
$750,
yeah. So that's two people go for free.
Right, so you and Tamara go free while all your friends pay $75.
Exactly, right? And it looks like it's an hour and a half tour of the harbor.
Yep.
Is that right? And there's non-alcoholic drinks. Their food requirement, because to sell alcohol in Ontario, I believe you have to have a food available. Also, it's chips at $3. And alcoholic drinks, $7 to $14. So you can pump around Toronto Harbor in a kind of cool-looking tiki barge.
Yeah, it's a round little barge.
Yeah.
A bar.
Three pontoons on it, I think.
Yeah. It was hard to get a good look from the photos.
In the picture that I've seen of really, but anyway, it'll be what it'll be. It'll probably pick you up down over on the city side, boot over to the channels, and go through the channels at like 5 kilometers an hour, and they'll play some tunes, annoy the kayakers, and you'll have some cocktails and take you back 90 minutes later. So.
And it looked like at night, the whole thing lights up.
Oh, I didn't like see the night pitch.
Neon colors and the whole new deal.
As it should.
Right?
I was in, was it Key Biscayne? Key Biscayne's that big area of water in on the inland waterway in Miami, right?
Right.
I was there once, and so paddling with this company down there. Did I have my boat? I had my own boat, but I didn't know the area, so I went out with this company. And there's this place in, I'm looking it up here, Biscayne Bay. Right up near North Bay Village, so the north end of like Miami. And I guess during low tide, it's kind of it's a sandbar, but it doesn't quite get submerged. It's maybe 2 feet under the water, and all these boats go around it. There are dozens and dozens of boats go around it. They anchor off it. There's people in kayaks there. People are standing on the sandbar throwing footballs and all that. But the coolest thing was there was this pontoon boat. It was essentially a floating convenience store. So if you wanted a grilled hot dog, you'd call the convenience store pontoon boat thing, and a guy in a kayak would run over to your, I don't know, Bayliner or kayak or whatever with, you know, two roasted hot dogs, and off you go. And I think it even sold booze. So you want a new six-pack, it's like, well, the guy's going to come over to your boat in a kayak with the six-pack.
See, yeah, that like, was a dude was probably raking it in.
I don't think, it was busy, like, you know, it was before kind of the digital phone age. I don't think I have any good pictures of it, but if I do, I'll pop them onto the Paddlemetry Radio Facebook page. But it's kind of a neat concept because you look around, especially off the Hanlon Point part of Toronto Island, the beach there. On a nice weekend day, there's a couple dozen boats anchored up off of there. And if you could figure out a way to get them stuff, I think people would buy stuff.
See, and that's what I said. Like, if you're, especially like on a summer Saturday, Sunday morning when all the fishermen are out, if you can get yourself a houseboat and put it in such a spot, like the main thoroughfare, like you'd have people pulling up in their boats, people paddling up, everything, and you'd make a killing.
You would. Well, one of our kind of things we got used to doing in the last number of years, that the west side of Toronto Island is Ward's Island. There was the Ward's Island Cafe. Unfortunately, it burnt down in February or March. Right. Like the paddling community, especially on a Saturday morning, you'd like launch early, you'd paddle around, you'd go stop at the beach at next to the ferry terminal there, and you'd walk over like literally 100 yards. Grab a breakfast sandwich or a breakfast wrap and a coffee and have a nice little break, right? Mm-hmm. So they've actually just last week or week before, they've got kind of a temporary facility going now with a couple of shacks that they, huts they put up there. So that's good to see that back. So I guess that's new at Toronto Harbourfront.
Weren't people trying to stop that?
There was, well, the Ward's Island Community Association, you know, there are about 600 residents that live over there on a couple hundred little homes. And they just, I guess when that place initially got their, like, operating license in that, it was for a certain amount of seats, and it was no alcohol. It was like a little coffee shop and maybe some baked goods. But this, and they're young, the people that own it now. They're in, like, early 30s. Like, they're total entrepreneurs, and they took it, and, you know, they make really good coffee. They got a liquor license. They've got a nice patio. They have a really great menu. They have a big garden right there, which they grow all sorts of stuff, which they donate a shit ton of it to the food bank on the mainland of Toronto. And it's just a really cool place to visit. During COVID, as we're coming out of COVID, they got the Cafe TO program so they could expand the patio. And it's a really cool place to stop in that. And I guess the island residents don't like that because they like their
peace little and quiet
place. They don't like anybody playing in their same pool. So a little bit of NIMBYism, but I know myself and some others wrote letters to the city councilors in the mayor's office and that. And like even like the mayor of Toronto was there the day that the thing burned down and was like, you know, hopefully we can get something for them temporary really quickly and blah, 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 blah. So they had the mayor on their side, but all these NIMBYism kind of, it's a cafe. Like,
yeah.
Break. Like,
you're going to go complain about Center Island.
What's that?
If you're going to complain about something, complain about Center Island.
It's oh, they do that too. They complain about the party boats. They complain about the Docks nightclub, which is now the Rebel, which is now the, you know, like it's,
yeah.
They just like complaining.
Yeah, they're out there. Have you noticed more or less paddlers out there at the times you have been out in the Toronto Harbor?
And, you know, it probably says a little less than maybe. And I think what's happening now is a lot of people that just got in it for the sake of getting in because they couldn't do anything else during COVID.
Right.
Maybe it drifted off. But as far as, like, sea kayaks and that, I think it's kind of the same number. Still see a lot of stand-up paddleboards out there. The random wreck kayaks, I don't know, because we didn't see a lot of those other than the rentals in the Toronto Harbor. Not hard to say with that, but probably down a little from, but down from like 2019, probably not, but down from like 2021 or 22, probably.
At the height.
Yeah.
Everybody was.
Right. Looking, you know, like, people up to like Duffins Creek or Etobicoke Creek or the bottom of the Humber without, you know, there being like, you know, 16 people blowing up a sup or, you know, pulling a friggin' pelican out of the back of a Toyota Corolla or something, you know. So I think some of that has dwindled off a bit as we're able to travel again and get out and do other stuff. So
I'm surprised it's actually taken this long to start dwindling a bit. Because even I've noticed it down where we are, you know, there is definitely less people out paddling the river.
Okay.
But and like you say, is once everybody was allowed out and the only thing they were really allowed to do was go paddling or something like that. And the numbers were, you know, you'd see 15 people going up the river and 12 coming back sort of thing the other way. And you got 20 some odd people passing each other in the middle of the river. Now it's, well, there's 4 people there. There's 2 people there. There's somebody solo sort of deal. I'm surprised it's taken this long because I figured once all the restrictions were done, you would see a massive drop. And it didn't happen as fast as I thought it would.
Yeah, that's been dwindling. And, like, I see that, like, with my Kingdom Outdoor business. Like, it's definitely not down, but it's not up either.
Right.
So.
Right. All we can do is keep beating it into people's heads that this is what they want to do. They want to be out on the water.
Yeah, no, paddling fun.
Yeah. Have you been watching the Olympics?
A little bit here and there. We're up at the cottage in Quebec, and I don't know if it even had TV, or if it just had, like, streaming. Watched a little bit here and there, of course, you know, saw the Turkish shooter.
Oh.
You know, with that dance, and, like, just, like, did this dude just walk out the back of the bar down the street? You know, you saw him and
John Wick from Turkey.
Iconic moments that made the Olympics kind of humorous. The pole vaulter.
Yes. You know. Yeah. Yeah. One too many poles on the vault. the surfer.
Is this a family show or is there?
Sometimes. Most of the times it's a family show.
The meme I saw coming out of the Olympics was, oh, that's great. You won gold in the men's pole vaulting. Congratulations, tiny.
So if you haven't heard about what happened in the pole vault at the Olympics, it was a French vaulter, wasn't it?
Just Google French pole vaulter.
Yeah, French pole vaulter. You'll know exactly. You've got the right video. So apparently,
Face searches off.
Yes. Whether it's true or not, I heard an adult video company has offered him $250,000.
Well done, son. If there was anybody who had more fun of that Olympic Games after sucking at it, I'm sure it was him.
Right?
So, well done, son.
So I was...
And made news. Canada's Katie Vincent, gold and bronze. Canada, Mississauga, where I grew up in spent a lot of time in Port Credit, so did she, Don Rowing Club. So that was pretty, pretty cool. The first Canadian women's gold in canoe or kayak ever, so that was pretty awesome. Met her a couple of years ago at one of her sponsors, had a little event, coffee shop. Met her, got my selfie with her, you know, as one does.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool, but I think you want to talk about something a little more gnarly.
So, I get a bit picky when somebody says canoe slalom, and I look at it, and it's a small kayak. The only thing
but
is
it's only one blade.
They're doing it with one. No, a canoe is not based on a blade because now I know a lot of people that are canoeing with double blades. Does that make it a kayak all of a sudden? No.
Well, that's where you get into terminology, right? If you go to the UK, as we've discussed here before, yes. And I think you and Eric have discussed as well, a canoe is a canoe is a canoe is a canoe. And it can look very different. What I paddle in the UK is a canoe. What you paddle in the UK is a Canadian canoe.
Right.
You know, yeah. Closed deck, top deck, open deck, whatever. So, hey, whatever.
These
it's
people
like it's a hot dog sandwich.
It's a hot dog a sandwich. Right? Yeah, it's just a wiener sandwich. It's closed on one side. So I like to catch up on the Olympics when I can and see, you know, various the water sports like the paddling and stuff like that. And
I pretty much keep track of the Olympics by the memes. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, yeah. Like the surfer guy, he's the other one.
Oh, that's fantastic! Best picture ever.
They took a picture just as he's standing straight up and down with his arm and finger up in the air.
Did you see that other picture? It was on the week this past weekend. I don't know who the athlete was or where she was from, but there's a whale breaching behind her.
Oh, that was one of the surfing.
Yeah,
they were surfing. Yeah, the whale was breaching behind
that was
them.
Pretty cool. I didn't even know they had surfing on the Seine in Paris.
Well, it was in Tahiti.
Oh yeah. Oh, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. So the surfing bits were down in Tahiti because the Seine River, the only waves you're getting there.
You're all serious now. I made a stupid joke. Just run with it.
Well, yeah. The only waves are coming from the logs in the Seine River. Anyway,
they had to clean up that Seine River.
Oh, people were getting sick.
Or it was.
Yeah. Belgium pulled out.
I will swim in the river. You know.
Yeah. Belgium pulled out because one of their swimmers got sick from the water.
Eek.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's the canoe slalom, the kayak slalom, which we're watching, you know, that sort of deal.
Sprint.
Kayak cross.
The most amazing sport I've ever seen in my life. Next to the ice skating, cracked ice Red Bull thing.
Oh, yeah. And that's exactly, yeah,
this is like the kayak version of that.
Yeah. So basically four people start at the top and they get dumped in down white water. And there are certain things they have to do while they're going down the course. Like one of them, you got to do a roll. So all of a sudden everybody gets to one spot and all four kayakers do a roll. And then
another one is they have to twirl around a gate.
So yeah, there's gates.
Green around a gate, so there's green and red gates, and I'm sure those colors mean something.
Yeah, so you either go forward around it, or you got to go backwards around it.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter if you're slamming into the other players or not.
No,
it's full contact.
One guy just drove over the other guy. It was like this is like Red Bull cracked ice or like water polo. If you're like water polo.
Yeah,
it's like the most insane sport ever. It's like, I will drown you for this point with my volleyball.
Well, have you not watched the canoe polo? We've talked about that a few times. Yeah, the kayak polo, whatever. Yeah, the kayak water polo. Have you never watched that?
Yeah.
It's
my
like
friend Bernie does that, actually. He does that up in Huntsville or Barrie or Alliston or something.
We watched it one year, and this guy was just paddling for all he's worth, and he speared a dude right in the chest with the front of his kayak. I'm thinking, sign me up, brother.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're watching this, and it's just like, wow. Like, there's one heat I'm watching, and they're paddling down, and they're doing everything they need. There was a girl that was in first, then she was in second. And then I thought she was going to take over. Then she hit a gate and screwed it up. And next thing you know, she's in fourth.
Boom.
Like, so it doesn't matter where you are anywhere on that course till you get to the end, because you could be in fourth and then all of a sudden everybody else messes up and, hey, you win. But Australia, Jessica Fox, she's like the one to beat in canoe and kayak slalom.
Okay.
Her sister... I think it looks like it should be Noemi, but everybody's been calling everywhere I see it, it's Naomi. There's no A in there. Anyway, so little sister is in big sister shadow all the time. I guess they were in the same heat in the kayak cross. Jessica, who's like top in the world sort of thing, finished last. Her sister.
But she's top in the world for the slalom.
What's that? Oh, yeah, she got gold in canoe. Yeah, she got the gold in the canoe and the kayak slalom, right?
Do the slalom people do the kayak cross and vice versa?
Well, some do the kayak cross, but others just do the canoe or the kayak, like just the slalom. So that's by yourself, right? So they were in the four of them together, and her sister, Naomi, ended up winning gold in that.
Hmm.
So all the golds were taken by the Fox family.
Not our conflicted parents, right? Like, what's Eli Manning's brother's name? Like, if they're ever playing,
yeah.
Well, dad are in the stands going, fuck if we know what to do right now. Like,
we're winners no matter what.
Well, I mean, that is. But they also have, like, mind you, we're talking millionaires here, but.
Yeah.
This is on a much lesser level. It's like, oh, our two daughters are in. And it's like, one is going to be very disappointed and one's going to be very happy.
Yeah. Well, they're both happy, but I never did check it, but I heard somewhere that either the mom or the dad were also back in the day, like into all of that sort of thing too. So runs in the family, I guess, but like I say, it's pretty cool to watch all that. And then you see something new at the Olympics, like the kayak cross. I'm not talking breakdancing here. No,
Canada,
no.
Another goal for Canada breaking. Did you see that?
I saw that. I did. Phil Wizard of Canada.
Amazing. And what a name to win with, too, right? But then you get Ray Gunn of Australia.
Right?
You could have breakdanced better than her.
I tell you. I don't know how that's considered a sport.
Kudos to her for that.
Yep. Well, everybody's standing behind her, too, from the breakdancing community, which is cool.
For sure. You're going to go out there and shoulder that, and you know, like what was it, 84 Winter Olympics? Was it 84, 86? Calgary, the Jamaican bobsled team, or Ada Eagle, or any of these athletes. So they're like, they're so driven, they want to compete and do something that they find a way to do it. And they're probably not going to be the best at it, but
they're doing
more about it than you or I are.
So,
mind you, that takes me back to my favorite meme of the Olympics. That the Olympics shouldn't be about world-class athletes. They should just be about random people from the country. It's like, Sean Allen, Derek, and John Van Berger, you are now going to represent Canada in the 4x100-meter relay. See you in Paris, boys. Now that I would tune in every night.
The donut relay. Well, so Chad, the country of Chad, sent three athletes. One of the guys was in archery. And so they show, you know, where everybody's arrows are going to go, you know, from like 3 points up to 10 points or whatever. And the one guy stands up from Chad, he pulls back and boom, and no one can see where the arrow went till they pan out. And it was in one point. They're like, nobody gets only 1 point. So that's why they don't. Apparently he taught himself how to shoot bow and arrow. He doesn't have all the protective equipment and extra bits that everybody else. Basically, he's the turkey shooter guy, but with archery.
You know, well done, Chad, man.
You know what? He came in dead last, but dude was there. Dude is an Olympian, right?
And did all the stuff that makes it so he can get there.
Right.
You know, so he probably had to raise money and convince government officials and blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. Like, that Ray Gunn deserves a lot more than the crap she's getting. So,
yeah. Well, like you say, it's just like Eddie the Eagle Edwards and the Jamaican bobsled team.
Two great movies, Cool Runnings and
Eddie the Eagle.
Eddie the Eagle or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Good movies.
All right, what's next on our thing?
Marshmallows. Let's talk marshmallows.
Thing. I came across this video on Instagram the other day. It was put up by one of my favorite Instagram pages called Foods Bible. And it was essentially pick your marshmallow. And it was a 10-step thing. Do you like it like just raw? Or do you like it step 10, which is like charred? Mm-hmm. Or do you like it somewhere in between?
How about a 5.5?
Air, I'll post this on the Paddling Adventure Radio Facebook, and then we'll get listeners' polls, see where you sit. If you like the one, which is like raw, two, let me just fast forward this a little bit. Two is like just a touch of heat to it, almost like it spent about 3 seconds over the fire. Three, you're starting to see a little bit of yellow. Four, it's got a little more yellow. Five, it's starting to get some crusty. Six, we're still yellow and crusty. Six is about where I like it. Nice and golden brown.
Yeah.
A little gold, a little brown. Nothing, no black yet. You know, I think seven, we started getting a little bit of black. Yeah, black is starting to get a little black on the outside. So that sugar is starting to caramelize, but still ooey-gooey in the middle. Eight, nine, and ten, it's just, now you're just eating carcinogens, and I'm not all about that.
Those are the ones where, oh no, my marshmallow, and you're blowing it out.
Yeah. Those are the ones like, eight, nine, and ten are the ones you kind of pull the black crap off the top, and then you just eat the molten lava that's still
underneath it.
Yeah. But then I just thought that was kind of neat, so I did some polls with friends and family. I think most people are like a five, six, maybe even a seven. I think somebody said a seven, so a little bit of black on it, but, you know.
You got to have the patience to get that nice and golden brown and crispy. You got to have that patience. Now, do you do anything else with marshmallows?
You got to roll, right? You got to roll, you got to put the heat, and you got to keep us like a rotisserie going.
Yep. Marshmallow fluff, I think, is very underrated when you're doing the marshmallows. We put it over strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
We put the marshmallow fluff on strawberries and then toast them.
Yeah.
So you end up with the really juicy, toasty marshmallow underneath that toasted strawberry underneath that toasted marshmallow, and it all just so flavorful. If you haven't done it, do it. And I do cheater s'mores because when I do s'mores, you do your marshmallow so it's nice and hot, and then you put it on the chocolate between the graham crackers. It never melts, the chocolate.
Yeah.
So I get a tin. I put rows of
tinfoil pan.
Yeah, one of the tinfoil pans. Yeah. And I put the crackers and then chocolate, and I cut a big marshmallow in half and lay that on top, and then the crackers on top. So I'll get about 12 or 13 s'mores in the bottom of a tin. I cover it, put it on the fire. Everything melts, and then I can just eat them and not have to like keep waiting while the marshmallows cook and everything tries to melt. It's cheap, but it works, and it's so much faster and better.
It I've never done that. I don't remember the last time I did a s'more because they just get messy, and when you're camping, just cleaning is just a hurt.
Try doing it with a beard, buddy.
Hey?
Try doing it with a beard.
Yeah. No. I don't even want to get my hands freaking dirty. So
right. All right. Let's move on. Humber River. We're talking about the dawn and stuff like that.
Yeah.
A Humber River full moon night tour. Now we've talked about. There's the company over there. They do the glow in the dark kayaks and canoes at night, so you can go out for night paddles and that sort of deal. Join a guided paddle on the Humber River on the night of August's full moon. See Toronto Humber River like you've never seen it before. Enter Toronto's calm, meandering Humber River at Kings Mill Park North. Paddle down as the full moon guides your way to the mouth of the Lake Ontario and towards a beautiful view of Toronto's skyline. We'll have staff on the water in their own safety boats during the nighttime paddle. August 18th, so that's a week away, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
7:45 p.m. to 9:45 p.m. It takes 2 hours. What's that?
We're recording this today. This is going to drop on the other day.
On the 15th, 16th, 17th. Yeah. Oh, so that's Saturday, next Saturday. This Saturday.
Saturday? Sunday.
Saturday? That'd be a Saturday. August 18th. I know when that sounds familiar.
Sunday.
Is it Sunday?
August full moon is actually called the Sturgeon Moon.
Yeah.
I just looked that up while we were talking.
August 18th is my sister's birthday. That's why it sounded familiar all day.
You'll still forget about it on the day of.
Yep.
That'd be a cool paddle. It sunsets at 8:26.
Yeah.
My app doesn't tell me what the moonrise is, but hopefully it's shortly. I'm sure.
Well, the moon's up while it's daylight still, right now.
Right.
So when I was looking out at 6 o'clock, the half moon was up.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, 8:06 a.m. the moonrise. So yeah, by the time the sun is set and it's getting dark, it'll be cool. Be up over the lake. That'll be nice.
Zip out there for 2 hours. Toronto.
The company Toronto Adventure, they do a couple of cool things on the Humber River there. They do like movies for the summer. Yep. I know they've done coffee nights and stuff. So very cool. And it's a family-run business, which is kind of neat.
Yes. So. TorontoAdventures.ca for more information. You can book your tickets and your kayak and that there and check it out.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. This one we sort of hits us. The Mi'kmaq canoe builder is facing challenges due to the decline of healthy birch trees.
Hmm.
Todd Labrador's family has been building birch bark canoes for generations in Kejimkujik National Park and historic site in Nova Scotia. That's a nice park, by the way. At one time, we harvested birch bark. We put our hands around the tree, and on the inside of the bark was wet, very wet. As you're harvesting birch bark, your fingers would get orange from the dye inside the bark, he says. He says for the past 5 years, his hands haven't been getting orange at all. Went out in search of more bark to build new canoes. A lot of trees.
Mosquitoes before he's gone out to touch the bark.
There's just a lot of the trees are dying. If you go to the birch trees in this part,
just skate right over that really bad joke.
You cut out. I didn't hear it.
I said, I wonder if he's tried Cheetos before he's gone out to touch the birch bark.
Harvest the Cheeto tree.
Probably just as well you skated right over.
No, so, unfortunately, for some reason, we cut out every so often when we talk over each other.
Probably for good measure.
Probably. A lot of trees are already dying. If you go to the birch trees in this part of Nova Scotia, for sure, Kejimkujik's in the southern part, you'll notice a lot of birch are already dying. The tops are dead, and a lot of big birches are on the ground. Still, he presses on to piece together any bark he can harvest into a canoe that will be launched in September. Visitors stop by his workshop in the park to learn more about his process of sewing a multitude of smaller bark panels together. And that's exactly what you see a lot of people. I mean, I think gone are the days when you get one canoe made of, like, one piece of bark.
Well, what are those? Remember, what's the name of the company? It's not Scott Canoe. It's somebody else that made a canoe to look like a birch bark canoe. Yeah. That had to fall back and the pontoony things on the side and all that.
Little black,
and
they always
look like they were a bunch of birch pieces put together. Mm-hmm. They ever looked like they were one big birch tree.
Yeah.
He
built an 18-footer last year, and that was 26 pieces of bark. Great-grandfather would use one tree, one piece, he says, and that would have been around the 1930s.
A few days ago, right? My 30s.
That's all like 100 years, almost.
Coming up close.
Something has changed in the last... Something changed
in the last 10 to 15. The bark won't harvest like it traditionally would. Now when we do, it's filled with lumps and bumps and we can't use it. You know, I'm sure that's probably in his region. Because I remember years ago, and this is going back probably 10 or 15 years ago, speaking to an old friend of mine, Mike Ormsby, who's an indigenous guy in Toronto, and he built tons of birch bark canoes, and he was telling me about it. It's like, yeah, you just can't, like, it's really, really hard to find what this gentleman's talking about, Mr. Labrador here, find birch bark trees that are good enough for this, that are, you know, because you want one that the memory correct is right about this, but you want one near the end of its life. You don't want to kill a live tree, like a living, nice living tree that's it's supposed to be nice and big and toward the end of its life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you kind of slit it all the way down, you're 18 or 20 feet from top to bottom, and you just unpeel it, and that's what you start working with. And he was telling me that about that this long ago as well. So I'm sure it's been ongoing for a long, long time. And I'm sure tree harvesting has something to do with it. I'm sure climate change comes into play. and many other factors that two bumps on a log like that have no clue about. So,
well, Labrador says he hasn't seen many insects and is unsure of the exact cause of the lumps. Recently traveled to New Brunswick to seek out better quality bark so he can keep his canoe building tradition alive by patching together whatever bark he can get. His current canoe is set to be completed and launched September 7th at the park, and the event will be open to the public. So if you can get the chance to go check that out. Yeah, so until they figure out what it is, he's going to have to keep going elsewhere and piecing together, like you say. But 26 pieces. Have you ever watched the National Film Board of Canada's Caesar's Birch Bark Canoe?
No.
Yeah.
Maybe part.
It's 50s or 60s. But yeah, it's Northern Quebec, the Caesar, indigenous.
In the winter, and he's building on like these like.
No, it's summer. Okay. Lots of mosquitoes. But he builds a birch bark canoe, and they follow him through the whole process of how to do it. It's pretty cool to see it. So, birch bark trees, they're dying.
Yeah.
This one's up your alley just because of the Scottish.
Hi, laddie.
Just because of the Scottish thing. Roland Arneson.
Hold on. 1 second. Back to the birch bark. The Sports Pal news.
Oh, Sports Pal. You know, yes.
Sports Pals?
Yes.
They're made to look like a birch bark with the you could put a motor on the back end and stuff.
That was like the Canadian Tire special.
Pretty much. Yeah, likely.
Roland Arneson, Call of the Loon expedition, has seen him paddle the length of the Scottish western seaboard in search of remote seabird colonies. Set off in April on a solo journey by sea kayak. See, why aren't you there?
Why not there?
Yeah, why don't you go there and do stuff like that?
I was there in March, and I saw seabird colonies, but I didn't see kayak up the coast.
Why?
I was there for a funeral, so I was engaged in other stuff.
Funeral's just, one day.
Just so you all know, I've never once seen Sean's face look like this. He was stumped. He didn't have a freaking clue what to say to come out of. I was there for a funeral.
Oh, I know what to say. I'm thinking, like, funeral's one day. How long were you there?
Well, you know how much tea you have to have with aunties when you're over there? And I'm going over there for a week.
They don't know how to sea kayak?
I did take 2 days to myself when I was there. I walked around Edinburgh and climbed up a big mountain in the middle of Edinburgh called Arthur's Seat. I can still feel my seat from climbing up that mountain. And I went to a place called Holy Island, just south of the Scottish borders in England, just north of Newcastle. And you can only get to it during high tide. So that was kind of cool. There's a little monastery over there and a castle up on a hill and little cafes and touristy stuff and that. But that was really cool. But I didn't get any time in boats that trip. But
nah, that's too bad. Have you ever gone?
Back in 2010, I kayaked off the coast of Scotland. That was pretty incredible. So,
well, this guy set off in April on a solo journey to find each of Scotland's seabird species and record them in their habitats. Audio recordings, photography, filming, and writing. Hopes, along with other researchers in the field, to uncover why seabird populations are declining so dramatically. The most ambitious aim of the expedition is to record the haunting, hair-raising, ethereal call of the great northern diver. The call of the loon. That was the other thing. I was going through this. Like, the great northern diver. Ooh, what bird is that? It's the loon.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they go over there?
Apparently.
They have the moon?
I guess.
So why do they call it a pound coin over there and not the loony like we do here?
I don't know. Maybe it's a heavy coin?
They don't have a picture of it on the pound coin for one.
What's on the pound coin?
The queen on one side, which I'm sure will be replaced by the king, and probably something regally on the other side.
Regally? So what do they need to call it? The regally? Regally? Call it probably a regally.
Probably a crown or something.
Just as challenging is that Roland is mostly paddling alone, living out of the kayak and a tent, spending weeks on and between remote uninhabited islands. I guess there it's... I mean, we think nothing of doing that here.
Yeah.
But there it's... Well,
I think nothing of doing that there either. Especially on the West Coast, because there's hundreds of islands.
Yeah, they just make it sound like it's a big deal.
Well, he's doing like a, I don't know, he's doing like a scientific kind of expedition. Yeah. It looks like it's on his own. And like that, I don't know, that's like something that we don't do here. We go up for a weekend and we paddle through islands or lakes or portages or whatever. But how many people do you know other than maybe, I don't know.
More and more people are going for these long.
Like they actually put science into their expeditions.
Yeah, science sucks. Science is for chumps.
Oh, please send your hate mail to Sean Rowley,
actually,
A, Toronto, Ontario.
The Arctic Cowboys, Wes Hansen and the boys and girls there, they were going up there.
Yeah,
and they were,
a scientific thing going.
Yeah, yeah. There's actually a few people that are doing that sort of thing now, testing the waters as they go on these long, long voyages. That seems to be the it thing to do now to help.
They're getting some of their funding from different research foundations and stuff up there.
Yep. He says, I've got the remote island off north. What did you say this was? Uist?
Hold on. I got it on my phone.
Oh, Uist, right?
Technology. Technology. Here we go. Where is it?
North Uist.
Uist.
North Uist.
There
so
you
he's
go.
Got the remote island off north Uist to himself. I've been watching an eagle chick on its nest and recording the calls from storm petrels at 2 a.m. It's a big tick on my seabird list and a really weird sound, like an old modern and maybe slowed down cicadas.
Yeah.
Well, okie dokie. He's now weighing up to a paddle to St. Kilda, which is heavily weather dependent and possibly tempered by even by recent experience. Last week, he was in Harris, managed to kayak the Shant Islands, which proved tougher than anticipated due to stronger than forecast headwinds and heavy swell. Then earlier this month, his kayak was taken out to sea while beached.
Oops.
Yeah, you always got to tie up your boats. You ever had that happen to you?
No, because I don't really paddle on tidal waters.
No, even still, just waves or wind.
Actually, no, we did. Actually, we were up on McRae Lake, so up near Honey Harbor, McRae Lake, probably early 90s, bunch of us in canoes and stuff. And yeah, I think three canoes ended up getting blown off overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go on a little search next data to. But we didn't have near it, so he had to swim out, ended up with hypothermia exhaustion, which ended with intervention by the Coast Guard team. Helicopter and RNLI lifeboat. It turned up in Skye 2 days later, having been spotted by two canoeists who spotted the upturned kayak, towed it safely, and alerted the Coast Guard. Wow.
Oops.
Coast Guard, who Roland had informed of his plight, matched up the report and reunited the kayak with its rightful owner. The definitive evidence of ownership, Roland joked, was a discovery inside the kayak of a Tesco club card with his name on it. So Tesco is, I don't know if anybody's aware, but it's like a Loblaws or a Safeway or something over there. So that's pretty freaking funny. So earlier I had mentioned how a friend of mine had been paddling in Scotland. I hope everybody's forgotten their names because they're not going to like the fact I'm going to tell this story. But one of them, right before they had left, had gotten a brand new iPhone 15. Now the newer iPhones have that SOS feature on it when you're in airplane mode or you're out of cell service, right? So if you sustain a fall or have an accident or are just plain shit out of luck and need help, you can press a button on your phone and boom, signals go to the nether regions and the big orange helicopter comes and picks you up. So they're landing for their lunch off some small island off the coast of Scotland and they're jostling kayaks, of which had dry bags of personal gear in these kayaks, of which this turned on cell phone was in there. And they're having lunch, and apparently this kayak, through all the jostling of lifting the kayak up the beach, up above the perceived high tide line in the next hour or so, ended up dialing SOS and dialing Coast Guard. So I guess it must have gone to, I don't know how it works in the UK, but anyway, a police officer ended up coming down to the beach, but they had just left the beach from lunch, So the police officer tried following them down the coast for several hours. So they landed for the evening. And then the police explained what they were there for, that they'd received an SOS. And so they look at the phone and see that, yeah, it says that it dialed the SOS thing. And just as they're all discovering this with the police officer and all that, this is 4 hours later now. So don't ever think that if you press that big orange button on your Spot or your Garmin or your iPhone or whatever, that 7 minutes later, a helicopter is going to be above you. 4 or 5 hours later, big helicopter, I don't know if it was RAF or the UK Coast Guard or whoever the hell it was, but the big rescue helicopter came. The guide, who's a very accomplished Scottish sea kite guide, you know, put two and two together with the police on the beach and what's going on with this SOS thing on my friend's phone and the big helicopter right above us now. And he's like, oh shit, turned on his VHF radio, talked to the Coast Guard, figured out what the up and up was. Everything's fine. Coast Guard helicopter, off it went. Police officer, off it went. And my friends now have a nice story to tell. And turn your damn phone off if it's in the boat.
Just take a Spot unit. Oh, yeah. Man. That'd be something, though. Could you imagine? Like, just sitting there and all of a sudden everything shows up.
Too, right? Like, I'm sure, like, technology is not infallible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and luckily, this phone did work as it was intended.
The newer phones, the 15s and up, have that new software built in. And come this fall, there's supposed to be all these upgrades that you can use it off-grid.
Yeah.
For these different features.
That one, she had it in airplane mode. She didn't have service when she was in the UK.
Right.
So it's it connects with the satellite, right? So, and she sent me a video the other day, which was put out by... It might even be in Apple or something. But it was like, and her caption was, this is how it's supposed to work. But this lady essentially got in a car accident. She was unconscious. Her phone dialed 911. 911 came, rescued her, rescued everybody else involved in the accident, got her to the hospital. Meanwhile, her phone is also calling her emergency contact. So, like, as she said, my dad and my sister knew I was in an accident before I knew I was in an accident because she was unconscious. And she learned when she wakes up the next day in the hospital that, like, her dad's already booked a flight and on his way to where she was. And, you know, that shows the video of dad in the chair in the hospital and her getting better and stuff. So, and my friend goes, this is how it's supposed to work.
Right.
But it did work as totally intended. It just, unfortunately, due to their whatever.
Things happen.
It shit happened and it worked. So but it just begged that just the reminder that when you call that emergency service, when you're out in the middle of nowhere, it's not an immediate thing. It can sometimes take a long, long time.
Yep. Well, and that's the big thing, even with the Spot and the Garmins and all that, people think the minute they press that button, help's on its way. And not necessarily like immediate, you know. So
years ago, other friends of mine got in trouble in the Upper Niagara River, up towards Lake Erie, not towards the big falls. And there was a group of 12 of them out one day, and the wind picked up, and they got separated. The river, the wave picked up, and this one lady, she just didn't have the strength to keep up with everybody else to get back to the Canadian shore. She ended up going over to Strawberry Island, which was her safest option. She looked at the forecast, saw it wasn't getting any better, and she didn't have anybody else on with the group's cell phone number. Of the 12 people, about 7 or 8 of them had VHF radios. A couple of them weren't on, and a few of them were in the cars, because that's where they belong. So she's like, well, shit. She called 911. Niagara Regional Police on the Canadian side picked up the call. They then contacted JRCC, the Joint Rescue Coordination Center at CFB Trenton in Canada. They then looked and saw what asset was best available in the Great Lakes region to go help my friend out in her kayak. And they tasked I think it was like a 21 or 24 foot rigid hull inflatable with 4 U.S. Coast Guard crewmen on board from Sector Buffalo. So they go out speeding through Lake Erie, down the Niagara River, pick her and her kayak up, take her over the Canadian shore, drop her off just offshore because apparently they can't land. An international incident, apparently. But they got her to safety.
Right.
And off she goes home. Off the Coast Guard men go home. And just for shits and giggles, I did a Freedom of Information request on that rescue. It came out to about 7 or 11 pages or something like that. And it itemized the cost at the bottom of, I want to say, and this is a long time ago, like 15 years ago, but like $3,500 or $3,700 for a couple guys in a dinghy to go rescue it. So I can't imagine the cost when the C-130s and the big fancy helicopters and all that
are getting sent. Because I know with Spot, I get the insurance with my Spot. So, you know, I don't mind paying them a little bit extra, because if I got to press that button and it's going to cost them $1 million to send out search, rescue, everything like that to come pick me and whoever else up, it's well worth that extra couple bucks a month sort of deal. But it's up to them to decide whether it goes against your insurance or you've got to pay, because they feel you were hiking in high heel which don't laugh, it has happened. People were hiking in high-heeled shoes and pressed their Spot button. You get charged. That's not going through the insurance of the Spot.
Yeah.
Right?
No, but you just out. Like a friend of mine, that happened to a friend of mine. She had to do that hiking Algonquin. And, you know, they had to send a beaver and a couple guys in canoes. And a couple other rangers came in as far as they could on an ATV. Then had to hike into where she was. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see. I bet you her rescue ended up costing several tens or thousands of dollars. But, you know, she went over on her ankle. So, and she had an Alcard device to save her, thankfully. So, but it wasn't a quick thing. It was a many hours thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a, I'm thinking if I ever have to press that button, I know I'm hunkering down to for a wait.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You know, so. Just got one more thing here. While searching a river in Poland, and we've talked about this sort of thing happening in a lot of spots lately over the last few years, group of volunteers noticed a submerged log. Something about it seemed unique, and rightly so. It turned out to be a historic find. Slavomir Kalinski led the group as they searched the Neru River near the Modlin Fortress. There they noticed the long, unusual shaped log. Intrigued, the group called in archaeologist Robert. I'm not even going to pronounce that last name.
Right, let's go with it. Rostkowicz.
Sure. Yeah.
Rostkowicz.
Why Rostkowicz?
Rostkowicz. Wow, okay. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, we're Robert.
Robert W.
had to take a look. He identified it as a dugout canoe dating back roughly 200 to 300 years. Historic boat was abnormally large, measuring 25 feet in length, and incomplete as it was missing part of the bow. 200-year-old canoe was well built, had a hole in the stern where a steering mechanism may have sat. Dugout canoes are considered the oldest type of boat, carved from a single tree trunk. Canoes typically held two rowers and measured 6 to 14 feet in length. People made and used dugout canoes beginning in the Neolithic period throughout the Roman era and into the 19th century. Especially, you got to go fishing and stuff like that, and transportation was rivers or bad roads.
Yeah.
Exact age of the canoe found near the Modlin Fortress remains unknown until experts use more precise dating techniques. After the initial inspection, the group hid the canoe along the riverbank, using stones to submerge it and keep it from floating away. River water will help preserve the fragile wood until officials have figured out where to take it. Modlin Fortress is on the outskirts of Warsaw, roughly 25-mile drive northwest from the city center. But that's what they found, the boats that they found in Wisconsin. The canoes, the same deal. They were underwater, and when they found them, they had to keep them under there till they could prepare a place where they could take them so they wouldn't disintegrate. Held down with rocks and dirt. And then when the lakes rose, they ended up being more underwater.
Underwater.
Underwaterer.
Yeah, so, I read this thing about, you know, 200 to 300 years ago, and like, you know, like canoes have obviously been around for ever in every culture. Like, you know, that we've kind of adopted it as our own, but the Polynesians and the Africans, the South Americans and the Incans, everybody else has been. And here we go, 200 to 300 years ago, the Polish people, you know, we're doing the same thing, dug out canoes and that. I remember watching years ago this documentary. It was called Happy People, A Year in the Taiga, T-A-I-G-A. It was about this village in of trappers and stuff in Siberia and all the old rudimentary stuff that they still use. Like, and that's what aired in 2010, it was so from early 2000s, late 90s and that. And it's just amazing, like, all these things that we thought, oh, well, that's a Canadian thing. Oh, no, they're doing it in friggin' Siberia. Of course they are. It's just our ignorance of what we know about just our lives, but, like, they're not dissimilar from so many other people's lives. And like, with this canoe, a dugout canoe 300 years ago in the forest in Poland, you know, like,
well, that's pretty cool. You start looking around the world at all the different types of floating transportation, and the dugout canoe is, like, everywhere. All continents.
Well, just think about if you ever go to a lake with an island on it, once you set up camp, and let's say you're there for more than one night, what is one thing you will do while you're there? You're going to go see that little island in the middle of the lake, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you don't think all these people, the Polynesians or the Africans or the Burmese or whatever, when they've gone to the shoreside and looked out and went, oh, look, a tree. Let's go look at that tree. How? I don't know. Let's figure that shit out. And they figured it out.
Swim.
No, that's what the Scottish guy did.
Not
the consequences.
First they swim, and then the lazy guy showed up, says, no, I'm just going to build a boat.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you look at the tools that people use and the methods, and there are similarities all through history, all around the planet.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's cool to find these things. Not really surprising, but it's pretty cool to find them. So we'll see.
No, you think dugout canoe, you think indigenous Canadians or indigenous, you know, Polynesians or something. Mm-hmm. I don't. You don't think of, you know, Robert W. in the middle of Poland.
Yeah, yeah. You're thinking something going down the Amazon or something.
Well, let's see here. It's on the outskirts of Warsaw, roughly 25-mile drive northwest from the city. Road trip?
I'm in.
All right.
We'll take Derek's car. He can pay for gas.
Well, either that or we join the guy counting seabirds.
Well, you can do both.
What else? We could go to Kejimkujik? Yeah.
Yeah. It's on the way. You hit Poland? Nova Scotia, then you hit Scotland, and then over it's a hop, skip, and a jump to Poland.
Poland's right there.
See?
Amazing.
And then we can zip over and see Ariana in Japan, and then back home.
All right. So we'll be back by Wednesday?
Ish.
Okay.
Not saying which Wednesday. Yeah. Yeah, I got a thing on Thursday.
Are we at our 52 minutes yet?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, just.
So Sean told me when I first started, he's like, hey, as long as I get my 52 minutes, I'm hoping to end at like 47 minutes so that we could just not get 1 over 52, but here we are.
Oh, 443 episodes have all been 52 minutes or longer because when we first started this thing, we had to have 52 minutes to be on the radio show.
What was the name of the thing? Reno Violo?
Outdoor Radio? Outdoor Journal? No. That's his brother, Outdoor Journal. Wow, so long ago now. It's like 8 years. I can't even remember. It's just totally...
How many episodes did you do with him?
I don't even think we reached 100.
No?
With him, no. No, it was only...
Not even 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we just decided to keep it as a...
It was like Reno Viola or something, wasn't it?
It's Reno. Reno Viola, yeah. Angelo, his brother's on what I call Real Radio. he does the Outdoor Journal.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's because of that show I was on his show that Reno heard.
Ah.
And said, oh, he sounds like he knows what he's talking about. I fooled him. Yeah, look at that one right over your eyes, buddy. We're actually at an hour and 15 minutes.
Damn it.
So, sucks to be you, buddy. You got anything else you want to talk about, Alan? Anything at all?
No.
No? Things are going good?
Did we talk about anything paddling related tonight?
We did.
Yeah, I guess there's a few things. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we were all over the board. And
now remember, your takeaway from tonight are go vote on the marshmallow poll thing we'll try to figure out how to do.
Yeah.
And also, you're supposed to go watch the French pole vaulter video.
Yes, and if you haven't seen Kayak Cross, go view that as well. I can't talk when you're on here, Alan. You just...
I'm doing nothing. I'm just sitting here.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Not always can be as serious like Derek, you know.
Yeah, Derek just sits.
They're having fun because they've been had... When did they go? When did they leave?
Sunday. So they've been gone for a few days now.
But there's weather coming Friday into Saturday. Otherwise, they'll have a good week weather-wise. Hot down here. I'm sure it's going to be nice up there.
Should be.
Are they doing much of a trip, or are they just like get one site, or what's their
plan? No, I think they're hitting a couple of sites. Okay. And then they want to go do the crack and stuff like that. Do some hiking and stuff while they're there. Do some fishing and some swimming and some relaxing and doing nothings and campfires, bunch of paddling and stuff like that.
Well, I'm sure they'll, because this will drop on Thursday, they'll be coming home Saturday, Sunday, so I'm sure he'll be listening to it in the car on the way home.
No, not necessarily.
He said he does that sometimes.
Sometimes.
Because he wants to see how much mischief I've been up to.
Right.
I think it's really Siobhan wants to hear my voice.
Probably. How you doing? if that's all you've got this week, Alan. Thanks for coming on, eh?
Hey, no worries. No worries. Always enjoy it.
Yeah, you know what? We always look forward to replacing Derek with somebody, and every so often we get somebody on here, and we think, yeah, I bet you could replace Derek, and then we get you.
Well, last time you had a co-host, because I haven't been on in ages. I don't even remember the last time I was on.
No, it seems every time somebody's on, Derek's here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just can't seem to get rid of the guy. I think he's on to us.
All right. Yeah.
Did you listen to last week's show? Andy and Kevin Callan are going away, way, way, way up north.
Yeah, but Kevin doesn't even know where he's going, does he?
And we does know if he's coming back either.
Okay.
We have a theory.
Did Andy tell you where he's going?
Nope. But our theory is he's taking Kevin way up there and not bringing him back.
Okay.
Take from that what you will.
Well, he just sold his house. What's his daughter's name again? Kayla?
Kyla. Okay.
Anyway, there's probably a bank account with a nice lump sum of money in there now that he just sold his house. So
see,
that'll make things easier for her if Andy disappears him.
Right? I used to have one of my buddies, I used to take him on canoe trips. And his wife always, jokingly, of course, well, if he happens to not make it back and there's some insurance money, a couple of percentage.
Not that I'm saying what you think I'm saying, but I'm totally saying what you think I'm saying.
Right? It's not that I wouldn't miss him, but I wouldn't miss him. Yeah, I brought him back every time just to piss her off. Thanks for coming on, Alan.
Cool, man. Thanks for having me.
If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and you can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can download or stream all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to
even you don't like.
And yeah, you can even share it with people you don't like. spam them. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. We'll see you next time.